Joining us right now, senior writer at The Athletic covering your New York Mets. I've been telling you the whole show that he was going to join us. Thanks for joining us. It's Tim Britton on The Fan. Let's talk Mets. Tim, how are you?
Pretty good, Keith. What's going on?
I mean, you got to be good, right? Were you in that celebration last night? Were you drinking champagne, or are you trying to restrain a little bit?
Oh, no. We're just off to the side letting them do their thing. You know, every once in a while, a player will spray the media contingent. Usually, it's you know, the Steve Gelbs of the world who get it more than us. But, you know, we did not do anything. So that's their celebration.
Yeah, how awesome is it for these guys who have called multiple team meetings, and the last one they talked about, you know, wanting to get to this point. Pete Alonso specifically saying he wanted to party with the boys. They didn't get to really do that at all. They had a little champagne toast in 2022, but didn't get to spray each other with the goggles and pour beers on each other and whatnot. How great is that for this group to already have done it twice in 4 days, Monday and Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, really, you look at what these 4 days have done to reframe how Mets fans feel about, like, this entire core for so long, you know, dating back really to, like, 2019. When Alonso and Nimmo were part of that core, first coming up and first playing some important games late in the season, there's been this knock that they play fine when they're behind, when there's not a lot to play for. That's when they play their best baseball. When it actually becomes crunch time, you know, they haven't been able to get over past the finish line. That happened in 19 when they finished a couple games out. That happened in 21 when they were in first place for 4 months and then really fell on their face in August. That happened, of course, in 22. And they couldn't hold off Atlanta at the end of the season and then lose in the wild card series. And so for, you know, Francisco Lindor to come through with one of the biggest hits in Mets regular season history on Monday, for Brandon Nimmo before that hit to come through with what would have been a huge home run on the eighth inning of that game, and for Pete Alonso to have the hit he had last night, which I looked it up, it was a championship win probability. So a hit that impacts your ability to win the championship. It's the biggest hit for the Mets since Game 7 of the 1986 World Series. For him to do that in that moment really kind of changes your idea about this guy can't come through in the clutch. That's as clutch as it gets.
Yeah, let's talk about Pete Alonso. There's been a ton of talk about Pete Alonso before the hit and now after. Obviously, the guy's in a contract year. He struggled a bit, but, like, I mean, his numbers are just down for him. Great for him to come through in that moment. I've been telling people, like, what if this propels him? What if he turns it on? What if, like, you know, this is the monkey off of his back? What if the weight is lifted? How did Pete seem last night, and what do you expect to see out of him in Philadelphia, where he's played and hit plenty home runs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea of the monkey off his back is a good way to put it. You know, Pete's been pretty even keel with us over the course of the season. He's kind of said that, you know, his focus is on the team, focuses on having quality at bats. He's said on a number of occasions, he thinks he's having a fine season, even if it's not the kind of 45 home run year or the 300 average with runners in scoring position year that he would like to have. But you can imagine, you know, I remember talking to Brandon Nimmo about this at the start of the season. Like, when you're in your platform year, you can be logical about it. You can say, I'm going to be judged by my entire body of work. You know, people aren't going to look at just what I do this year or just what I do in a couple of weeks. But when you're in a slump, you start calculating how much money you might be losing. It's just natural and human to do that. And when Pete Alonso is on the brink of finishing his Mets career 5-for-41 without an extra base hit over the last 2 weeks, you can imagine how differently Mets fans, how differently front offices might feel about Pete Alonso if he grounded into a double play there last night. You know, that's one at bat, judging him by one at bat, and it changes so much for him. So I think, you know, your notion that this might be a weight off his shoulders, I think a lot of people think that. And it'd be interesting to see if he can carry that momentum into the division series and maybe beyond for the Mets.
How about Jesse Winker, a guy that's bounced around a couple teams that was viewed as a villain by Mets fans? And I feel like when he got here, he really wanted to ingratiate himself with the fans, with the team. He just wanted to belong. I always make the joke, I'm like, he smacks the air harder than anybody. This guy's spiking his helmet. When he had that walk-off, he did it again last night and breaks the helmet. What about his impact, his personality, and also the decision to, you know, put him back in the lineup after having J.D. Martinez in the lineup the second game? And obviously with Mendoza, you know, it worked.
Yeah, I love what Mendoza said about him yesterday, which, you know, someone asked if winning in Milwaukee might mean more to him because he'd been booed there. Mendoza just goes, I think he gets booed everywhere. You know, like, just anywhere he walks into, he gets booed.
He's that kind of guy, yes.
He said, my handshake with him is I boo him. We shake hands, I go boo. I think Winker's an important part of the lineup at this point because it's still right hands heavy. Without Jeff McNeil in there, with Starling Marte and Tyrone Taylor kind of running with everyday outfield spots, that was a little bit more of a matchup situation for the Mets in the month of September. But Winker and Martinez both have bounced back from pretty horrific September slumps to be viable options at the DH. And that gives the Mets a little flexibility here going into this series with Philly, where you'd probably imagine Winker is going to get the starts against Wheeler and Nola in games 1 and 3. You'll see Martinez in there in games 2 and 4 against Sanchez and Suarez. And that just gives the Mets lineup a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more right-left balance, especially when you're talking about going up against the Philadelphia pen that has a few options from the left-hand side.
Yeah, let's talk about the pitching matchup. I'm walking home today from the train, and I get the alert that Kodai Senga is starting game one, and I'm like, I double-checked. I'm like, wait, last night I saw the tweet, and I was on, and I was talking about it because Mike Puma put out a tweet that he might be in consideration. He went from consideration to taking the ball. He's only pitched in one game, and it was very, like, obviously you remember the Braves series and what happened then. It was very dramatic. He's ready to go. I guess the Mets feel confident in him. What are you expecting to see out of him? There was a question posed to him about, how many pitches. What do you expect the plan to be with Kodai Senga, and how do you expect him to perform in this moment?
Yeah, I give a lot of credit to my colleague, Will Salmon at The Athletic, who I think you've had on here your show before.
Yeah, shout out to Will.
Will was all over this last night that this was not just a consideration, but something they were seriously contemplating, basically trying to decide is what we can get out of Kodai Senga, which might only be an inning, might be an inning or two in one game of a five-game series. Is that worth carrying him on the roster over someone else in some other long man in the bullpen? And I think they probably made the right decision by taking that risk with Senga. We know what he can be when he's at his best. He's not going to be stretched out. He's not going to go 5 or 6 innings. He joked that he could go 200 pitches if they wanted him to. He'd be willing to do that. But I think, this is probably 3 to 6 outs. I'm probably trying to get through like 6 hitters or something like that. What it does is Philadelphia is a platoon lineup, against a right-handed starter. They're going to start Bryson Stott at second base and Brandon Marsh in left field. Against a left-handed starter, it's going to be Edmundo Sosa and Austin Hayes. So if Senga starts, those guys, Philadelphia and Rob Thompson have to make a decision. Do we put our left-handed hitters in there, or do we go with our righties and risk that Senga is going to go through that part of the order? So you just save, maybe one matchup that you win the platoon advantage for with the Mets. If you go with Senga, then maybe replace him with a lefty like David Peterson and flip that script a little bit. That's I think, what their goal will be in game one. But if Senga looks the way he did in that late July start against Atlanta, where he was really cruising before the calf injury happened, that could be just a huge lift for a team that doesn't have the deepest pitching staff this time of year.
Chess match coming up. Rob Thompson versus Carlos Mendoza is going to be fun. Let's talk about this rivalry. We're on the phone right now with Tim Britton from The Athletic, who covers your Make It Happen Mets. I mean, this rivalry is great. It's New York, Philly. It's close proximity. These teams see each other all year, but they don't always see each other in the postseason. I actually don't know. I need to pull up the numbers on how often that even happens. But it's special. It's rare. And I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to make for great theater. Guys like Bryce Harper, guys like Nick Castellanos and JT Realmuto, Trey Turner, they just have a lot of guys. Kyle Schwarber, they have a lot of guys that have been there. Even Rob Thompson, right? These guys have been to the World Series. These guys have hosted postseason games versus this Mets team who in 2022, they didn't get out of the first round. Now here they are. They're arguably the hottest team in the dance, and they're going up against the Phillies with nothing to lose. What do you think that's going to do for a Phillies team that's been on ice this week versus a Mets team that's been super hot? Here comes a collision course at Citizens Bank Park. Let's see how the Phillies respond and if the Mets can keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, this is their first ever postseason matchup.
This is the first one all time. I didn't know that.
Earlier in September, when they played, that series in Philly in mid-September, it was the first time they'd ever played in the month of September with both in playoff positioning. Teams that are really close but are generally not good at the same time. We haven't seen them good at the same time, really dating back to, 07, 08, when that rivalry was at its hottest for the Mets and Phillies. I think there's a couple interesting dynamics. It's how does Philadelphia handle being the hunted rather than the hunter? in the month of October, we've seen them in the position the Mets are in the last 2 years, where they were the underdog going into Atlanta, playing against the division champion, the team that had been sitting for the last 4 or 5 days, and the team that felt like it had some positive momentum going in each of those series, and they took out Atlanta both times in 4 games. You know, how do they handle the break that they've had and trying to start it up against a team that's feeling that positive momentum? And for the Mets, I'm really excited to see what the atmosphere is like at Citi Field in Game 3, especially if the New York is able to grab one in Philly, one of these two games this weekend. Because back in 22, when they made the play, you know, when they're playing that wild card series in San Diego, it was almost like they were limping into the playoffs because they'd been caught by Atlanta. There wasn't this feel that they should have been in that series to begin with. They shouldn't have had to play it. And so the fans, there was just like a level of anxiety sort of to the crowd there, rather than kind of the excitement that should be there, that should greet a team in the postseason. So I think we'll see more of that kind of raucous atmosphere. We saw it in the watch party that they had last night with however many fans they had at Citi Field for that. So I think it's just, you know, between the two environments, it's going to be as loud as any division series I think has ever been.
Yeah, I was saying on The Fan last night that baseball missed the environment that New York creates, right? Citi Field, Yankee Stadium. And now when you get these teams in close proximity that have never faced off in the postseason like this, the stage is set. I can't wait to see it. And I think that the Mets have the chance to go in there and kind of swing first and land that first punch and quiet those fans down. And if they take Game 1, like they have a leg up in the series. Okay, two more things for you, Tim. One on Francisco Lindor. Obviously, we were worried about his back. I know he's playing through some pain. Anything that he said about it, any other reports, anything on Francisco? Like, I mean, the guy has shown up in an elimination game. He's showing up at the plate, couple hits. He's showing up in the field. He's not making any excuses. Like, where are we at with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's 100%. And I think probably the deeper we go into October, the further he gets from 100%. But that's the case for a lot of guys this time of year, and he's clearly shown he's able to be a really good and really impactful player at whatever percentage he is at. You know, he talked about it on Monday when he hit the home run that, you know, what was he thinking around going around the bases? Why was he so calm? My back hurts a little bit. And then last night he was saying that the champagne helped numb the pain a bit, as you can imagine. So I'm not too worried about what Lindor can give them. We've seen, you know, in that Game 3 against Milwaukee, he made a number of really impressive rangy plays at shortstop. And the Mets infield defense, especially at second and short last night, was about as good as we've seen it all year, even though some of the Brewers still beat out a couple of those plays. They've had as much range between him and Iglesias as we've seen. So I'm not too worried about what Lindor can give them over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, last thing for you. I'm a little worried about the Mets bullpen. Obviously, you see Jose Buto not look great last night. Phil Maton not look great the night before. Edwin Diaz be kind of shaky here. Like, these guys got to absolutely tighten up. But, like, you know, when you get into these series and the way that they're set up with the off days, starting pitchers become available. What are you expecting to see with Carlos Mendoza and the buttons that he pushes and how he uses this bullpen coming up against this lineup for the Phillies, who we all know pretty much all the guys in it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in seeing how they kind of build that hierarchy, because I think coming into the playoffs, they would have said, you know, if we've got a lead in the last 3 innings, it's probably Ryan Stanek in the 7th, it's Phil Maton in the 8th, and it's Edwin Diaz in the 9th. Obviously, the fatigue that they had for some of those guys, for Maton in particular, messed with that a bit. The Buto looked so good in Game 1. That was as good as he looked in probably July out of the bullpen. But then when they try to come back with him a little bit quicker than he's used to, he didn't have it on Thursday night. So I think, you know, he's going to be a guy who's going to be able to pitch in one game, and then he's going to have to sit a couple days before he's able to pitch again. So he's not going to be available every night. And then I think the other interesting question is, what do they do from the left side? You know, Danny Young did not fare well against the Phillies in particular this season, did not look great down the stretch, and they clearly didn't trust him in that wild card series. I don't think he even warmed up in any of those 3 games. David Peterson is the guy who could be a left-handed reliever if you want. I think he's done a little bit in the past, clearly did it last night, but you probably want him starting too, or at least pitching bulk innings behind Kodai Senga in Game 1. Do they turn to Jose Quintana, and can he be a guy who gets lefties out? It's not really, he doesn't kind of have the stuff that you'd expect for that role. So what are they going to do when you've got, you know, Schwarber, Turner, Harper coming up? in the sixth inning of a game and you want a left-hander in there, who do they turn to? And then the last part is Tyler McGill a guy that they can throw in the bullpen there? They think so. They think he's a guy who can play up with his stuff there. We've seen it with his brother, clearly, Trevor in Milwaukee. So can McGill be a guy who gives them something extra out of the pen? And can they just find enough guys to throw at the wall that a couple of them get hot in this series and beyond?
Awesome stuff, Tim. You're the man. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Tim Britton, at Tim Britton, B-R-I-T-T-O-N, on Twitter. He's a senior writer at The Athletic covering your Make It Happen Mets. Have a good night, Tim. I'll let you go.
You too, Keith. Thanks so much.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.